Audio Service, National Radio Club.
Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for June 2005. This is issue number 243, and I'm your host, Fred Vobey, the publisher of the DX Audio Service. My address is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835. If you live in the United States of America or Canada and would like to become a member of the DX Audio Service, the cost of a subscription is $28. To Europe and elsewhere, it's $40. Those prices are also the renewal rates. Tapes are sent by first-class mail, and you keep your cassettes. If you'd like to subscribe, make a check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that is mentioned, or simply log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org and sign up using our PayPal credit card system. Well, let's swing it right on down to the city of Fort Worth, Texas. Here's Bill Hale.
Thanks, Fred, and welcome to AM Switch for the DX Audio Service for June of 2005. First of all, call letter changes. Well, last month we spoke of a couple of changes that were pending in the Chicago area, but now seem to have gone through. 820, the old WCSN in Chicago, is changed to WAIT with Catholic Relevant Radio programming. This action returns the WAIT calls to 820, where they resided from 1941 to the mid-1980s. And on 850, WAIT in Crystal Lake, Illinois, their new calls are WCPT, meaning Chicago's Progressive Talk, with Air America most of the broadcast day. On 910, WGBI in Scranton, Pennsylvania has changed to WBZU. 960 in Greenwood, Mississippi, WJGJ has changed to WABG, returning to these original call letters. On 990, WNOX in Knoxville, Tennessee has chosen WNML as their new call, and they've taken on the slogan, The Sports Animal. 1030 WFTK Wake Forest, North Carolina has chosen WDRU for their new call. 1360 WTSH in Rome, Georgia, their new call is WGJK. 1450 WCLI in Corning, New York, their new call WENI. Two stations in Eugene, Oregon have changed calls. On 1450, KOPT is now KLZS, and on 1600, KEED is now KOPT. And on 1610, the station in Toronto, Ontario, there has been a controversy over what their call actually is. And Dean McIntyre reports it's CHHA. By the way, they're 1 kilowatt day and night, non-directional. Moving on to construction permits on the air during the past month, KUTR 820 in Taylorsville, Utah is taken to the air with a woman-oriented talk format. Their facilities are U2 50,000 during the day and 2,500 watts at night. On 890, KDJQ in Meridian, Idaho is taken to the air with an oldies format with the songs ranging from the 57 to 65 era. Their facilities are U2 50,000 days and 250 watts at night. 1150 KCPS in Burlington, Iowa, their CP is on 500 watts during the day and 67 watts at night. 1160 KNEI from Waukon, Iowa has made the move here from 1140. The format remains sports from ESPN. Their facilities are 880 watts during the day and 26 watts at night, all non-directional. 1330 WMOR in Moorhead, Kentucky, the program test authority has been granted for their CP to increase the height of the tower using a folded unipole element, necessitating a decrease in power. Their new facilities are 570 watts during the day and nothing at night. And 1490 WAFZ in Immokalee, Florida, their CP for U1 560 watts during the day, 700 watts at night from a new 205-foot tower is on the air. That's a power correction from last time. Grants to existing facilities, 950 WPEN in Philadelphia. Well, shortly after their CP for U4 5,000 watts during the day, 21,000 watts at night was granted, the FCC granted a later application for U4 50,000 5,000 from two transmitter sites. The day facility will share the WWDB860 site, and the nighttime transmissions will emanate from their original transmitter. So it seems WPEN is now authorized for U4 50,000 and 5,000. KKOL 1300 in Seattle, Washington has been granted a CP to increase day and night power levels from a new four-tower array. When built, KKOL will be U4 50,000, 50,000. 1430 WDJS in Mount Olive, North Carolina has been granted a CP to increase the daytime power and also authorizing nighttime operation. When built, WDJS will be U5, 10,000 watts during the day and 7 watts at night. And remember that U5 designation means they're directional during the day, but not at night. In Canada this month, the move of CHUC Cobourg, Ontario to FM 107.9 with 1.03 kilowatts has been approved by the CRTC, so another Canadian graveyarder bites the dust. Some notes from here and there. It's been reported that WAML 1340 Laurel, Mississippi has returned to the air now with a black gospel format and a slogan of Power Gospel 1340. And WDXQ 1440 in Cochrane, Georgia has returned with a Classics Hits format and slogans as 96Q WDXQ FM. WBVA 1450 Bayside and WVAB 1550 Virginia Beach, Virginia have turned the plate voltage off during the past month. Off but then back on, KIRL 1460 St. Charles, Missouri is now religious on the Eternal Word Network. Well, as most of you know, radio stations are required to renew their licenses periodically, and the print edition of AM Switch and DX News reports that information when the FCC action has taken place. David E. Lewis of Kansas City, Missouri writes to inquire about the status of a couple of stations which haven't appeared. First, WEEP 1400 in Virginia, Minnesota. Well, I called the number listed in the latest AM log, which did not answer. So I called KRBT 1340 in nearby Eveleth, Minnesota. After confirming all of KBRT's listed information, I asked about WEEP. They confirmed 1400 was off and had closed up shop, but the FCC continues to list them. And concerning WCOX 1450 in Camden, Alabama, the FCC files show a renewal application was filed on January 12th of 2005, but that was dismissed, no reason was given, and no petitions for reconsideration are on file. So if any one of our subscribers lives in the Camden, Alabama area, how about checking up on WCOX 1450? Tell us if they're on the air, and if you want to give them a call, ask them why their license hasn't been renewed. A call to the DX Audio Service hotline would be appreciated. This might have been one of those red light license cancellations where they failed to file for renewal in the first place. Well, we've been waiting for more FCC fines to come down, but none have been reported for the past couple of months. However, the FCC has revoked the license of WSTX 970 in Christiansted, U.S. Virgin Islands, for violations including a non-functioning EAS equipment and failures to respond to FCC correspondence. Well, that's about all for this month. I thank Frank Aiden, Sean Axelrod, Bill Dvorak, and Mike Reardon for information passed along. It's time now to turn the microphone over to John Bowker for this month's travelogue.
National Radio Club. Well, thanks once again, Bill Hale, and hello, everybody. Welcome back to part two of our travelogue at the 920 dial position as we crisscross the United States on our way out to the West Coast. But before we get started with the station breaks, let me just recount to you. We got a terrific tape from Josh Owens in the mail. Hey, Josh, that's as great a tape as you've ever sent in. What a trip you had down through, what, four states at least. And my cup runneth over because for the first time in the 20 years, whatever it's been, that I've been a member of the National Radio Club, I finally got to meet Skip Dabelstein from Arizona. And he and his lovely wife, Karen, joined Linda and me for an idyllic dinner on the shores of the Gulf of Mexico just a couple of weeks ago. And Skip, thanks so much for everything you've done for the audio service and the tapes you provided us, too. That's going to be a great addition. Now, on that count, today we're going to be having some station breaks recorded not only by Linda and me, but Clark Ingram has stepped up to the plate with a couple this month. Ron Clark sent one in quite a few years back, along with Mark Strickert. Mark Durenberger, too, sent some in. And we have one from Ernie Wasilowski this month. So this is going to be a lot of fun today. In fact, we're going to travel from Appalachia to Deadwood. We'll be winding up there today. And in between, we're going to stop on the shores of the Great Lakes, and we'll be visiting the hometown of the Caped Crusader. Wait a minute now. Caped Crusader, that's Batman, isn't it? That's no good, because this is a different Caped Crusader. We'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. But we're going to visit first a little town in southeastern Kentucky called Whitesburg as we begin the June 2005 DX Audio Service Travelogue.
Classic Country, AM 920, WTCW, Whitesburg, Kentucky.
Labor Day outreach by President Bush.
ABC's Ann Compton's traveling with the president to a union gathering in western Pennsylvania.
And that was recorded in 2002, therefore we're talking George W. Bush as president. Okay, let's go a little bit further to the east, up into West Virginia.
Some people look at food and gain weight, while others can eat all they want and keep the pounds off. I'm Dr. Brian McDonough.
Marion County's radio station for CNN Headline News and the best in play-by-play sports. AM 920, WMMN, Fairmont.
Closed captioning is brought to you by the Invention Submission Corporation.
Boy, you got to hand it to those West Virginia stations. They never skip a beat. Closed captioning on the radio. Well, oh dear. We're going to go over to the dead center of the state of Ohio now, right into the state capitol.
This is the home of the American League Central Division champion Cleveland Indians, 920 WMNI, Columbus.
Mark News, it is 7 o'clock at WMNI. Our weather forecast is calling for a very, very windy day today and then much colder tonight. Complete details of the official forecast coming up.
Well, nah, thanks very much. Cold and windy is enough detail for us, I think. So let's take our chances and go even further north. We'll go up into Michigan, but we're going to go way up to the UP, the Upper Peninsula, and find our way to one of the most northern cities in the state of Michigan, which is Hancock. It's really a suburb of Houghton. That's on a little promontory that sticks up into Lake Superior. This station runs 1 kilowatt during the days and just over 200 watts at night.
I will trust, I will not be afraid. Behold God is my strength.
This is AM 920 WMPL Hancock.
Well, if truth be known, we're going to be coming back up that way in the not-too-distant future. But for now, let's go over to the Hoosier State, state number 24 on the DX audio service. And just, 100 miles, is it, north of Indianapolis, we come to Purdue University.
It's 76 degrees, and you're listening to WBAA 920 in West Lafayette, Indiana. It's 11 o'clock.
Well, now for this next station at 920 on the dial, we have to leave Indiana and go all the way across the state of Illinois, right over to the Mississippi River.
920 on your AM dial, WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
This is Ben G. Phillip with Inspiration Hours of Gospel Power, heard here each Saturday evening between the hours of 7 and 10. It is now 4.5 minutes past the hour of 8 p.m.
You know, there's a certain irony to that ID, because so often stations of that type just don't give station breaks. And by golly, 4.5 minutes past the hour, there he was. Ah, very good. We're going to move now over to the southern part of Illinois, to a little town with a remarkable history. In fact, it's reminiscent. I wonder how many of you remember the little town, halfway from El Paso up to Albuquerque on the interstate, that was renamed some 50 or 60 years ago. It was renamed to Truth or Consequences, based on a radio program. Well, there was a bit of a squabble about that. And can you imagine when the town fathers of Metropolis, Illinois, decided they were going to build like a 20-foot-high statue of Superman in the town square?
Nice job by Mayhay. He has set down all six that he has faced. At the end of seven, the score, it's the Marlins 8, Cubs nothing.
920 WMOK Metropolis, your source for news, sports, and today's best country. 920 WMOK.
Well, I guess we won't wait for the game to restart. And besides, the Cubs sort of coming in on the short end of that one, right? In fact, as we go north through Illinois now, we'll go speeding through the city of Chicago and stay right on the lake as we come to Milwaukee.
the only station you can count on for news every hour, on the hour, 24 hours a day.
WOKY, Milwaukee.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Jerry Hamilton.
Well, we've arrived at that magic moment, ladies and gentlemen, at the 920 dial position when we cross the Mississippi River. Not only that, but up in the state of Minnesota, about 40 miles due south of downtown Minneapolis, is the city of Faribault. And it has the most powerful station that we'll have all day today. 5,000 watts day and night.
I'm Bruce Williams. This is TalkNet.
TalkNet is an all-night feature of KDHL 920 AM Faribault, Minnesota. KDHL is the only station in the multi-state region carrying nationally syndicated TalkNet.
Well now, up in the west central part of the state of Minnesota, actually a little closer to Fargo than to Minneapolis, is the small town of Wadena, Minnesota. They have a 1 kilowatt station.
That's what it looks like in world and national sports. We'll check the local and regional stuff for you after the top of the hour, and we got the summer rec report coming up, too. It's 8 o'clock at KWAD Wadena, KNSP Staples.
This is a bat. This is a ball. When they connect, it sets in motion a whole series of events that end with the batter being called safe or out.
You're out.
Well, that's good to know, and I guess we've also learned that the next time we want to pick up that station, we've got to get up off the interstate and go up a little closer to town. Well, let's see. Ah, it's time to go down the Mississippi River, as we do about this time every month or three. And we're going to come to Shenandoah, Iowa. Now, that's nowhere near the Mississippi. In fact, it's tucked way over in the southwestern part of the state of Iowa. And they have a station there running 5,000 watts during the daytime hours and 2,500 watts at night.
KYFR, Shenandoah, Iowa.
The time now, 7:59.
He said today that Israel wants to resume peace talks with Syria, telling Israel Radio's Arabic service that Syria proposed peace talks resume at Y Plantation near Washington, and as Netanyahu put it, I am certainly open to that.
We're going to skip right on through the state of Missouri as we proceed south down the Mississippi River Basin, and we'll go to the state capital of Arkansas.
Westbound 630, a little bit crowded in various spots. Drivers, be careful.
All right, Don, thanks a lot. 76 degrees now in Little Rock, mostly sunny skies.
News Radio 920, KARN Little Rock, the news authority.
KARN News Time is 5 o'clock.
News, I'm David Dow in Los Angeles. Time and again today, the questions at President Clinton's press conference turn back to Bosnia.
And our next state will be Louisiana. We go to the town of Bogalusa. Isn't that a great name? Right on the Mississippi border, down almost on the Gulf of Mexico.
This is WBOX Bogalusa, WBOX FM, Varnadoe, Franklinton.
CNN Radio News. I'm Stan Case.
Okay, we're going to head west now, distinctly west. And this is also today's first Spanish lesson.
Número uno en español. KBNA.
KBNA.
AM FM.
El Paso.
Qué buena KBNA con la buena música que a usted le gusta y la información.
And from El Paso, still with our dials locked at 920 kilohertz, we come back into the Houston metro area to the town with one of the worst disasters, explosions actually, in American history, Texas City.
Esta es KYST 920 AM Estéreo, transmitiendo con 5,000 watts de potencia desde Texas City, Houston.
Efectivamente, y anotando todo el personal en esta promoción, sensacionalísima, y además con qué música.
And we wind up next to the city that is so bad it takes four presidents of the United States to watch over it. And don't laugh. That area is called the Badlands, after all.
Anytime you need a great song,
you know, to pick you up and make you feel good,
just remember, you can count on us.
Your good time holding station.
Cool 92.
KKLS Rapid City.
Well, that's going to do it for this month, everybody. Now, you all know how I like to kid around a lot, but this is no fooling. I am really privileged to once again introduce Mark Durenberger, but this time is extra special. Mark has assembled a six-part presentation on the breakup of the Clear Channels, and part one is going to start right now. Tell us the story, Mark.
Well, John, it'll be quite a story. The history on how the 1A and 1B channels were broken up will take us through more than 50 years of political and technical maneuverings in the broadcast industry and at the FCC. As you know, there's been a lot of interest on the part of our listeners, so today we begin a multi-part series that will take us into this matter in some detail, perhaps more than you could ever want. You'll get a good idea of who was where on the band as far back as the early 1920s. But our story actually begins in the year 1980. The FCC was about to dramatically alter the face of U.S. broadcasting by issuing two important rulemakings. Docket 80-90 would soon transform the FM band. But the issue with the longest history and heaviest baggage was the AM clear channel proceeding. And by the way, for convenience, we use the terms 1A and 1B for the stations throughout this report, even though those labels weren't officially applied until 1941. We'll also stick to the term kilocycles until the date at which it became kilohertz. We'll describe how early radio regulations stimulated the development of high-power AM broadcasting by protecting the signals of certain stations from interference across the United States and beyond. This protection was designed to allow these high-power stations to deliver radio to underserved rural areas. The mixed success of the plan and the opposition it generated from the have-not broadcasters stimulated a 50-year regulatory brouhaha that was finally settled by an FCC report and order that would change the AM dial forever. The breakup of the United States 1A clear channels is an interesting story. The clears were the bedrock of what was called the standard broadcast band. The stations given clear channel protection were incentivized by this wide area protection to provide full-service programming across their service areas, and they invested in the resources to carry out that obligation. So it's not surprising that once on the air, they were very concerned about protecting and growing their investment. As far back as the late 1920s, industry regulators were concerned with providing reliable nighttime radio to the underserved white areas of the country. While a number of channels were set aside for wide area coverage, it turned out the stations on these clear channels, even with 50,000 watts, could not provide solid coverage of those vast areas. Given the physics of the situation, there seemed to be only two ways to solve the problem. Add additional stations on those clear channel frequencies, or grant massive power increases to the existing operators. These alternatives would define the clear channel issue for more than a half century. In researching this matter, we looked at thousands of pages of pleadings and arguments in public records and private libraries. We owe a debt of gratitude to WCCO Radio for providing a review of its technical files, and we thank WSM in Nashville for making available its own records and those of the Clear Channel Broadcasting Service, CCBS. CCBS, by the way, would play a key role in promoting the welfare of the clear channels and in advocating AM superpower. In this regard, we also want to recognize Ward Quall, one of radio's great statesmen. He was a key force behind CCBS, and his input into this report was invaluable. We also owe a thank you to Thomas White for his excellent work on the formation of the broadcast band. Section 73.231 of current FCC rules defines a clear channel as one on which stations are assigned to serve wide areas. Well, there was a time when that was an understatement. Until the early 1960s, clear channel meant just that. There was only one domestic assignment on each of a couple of dozen AM frequencies from 640 to 1210 kilohertz, with a couple of exceptions, as we'll point out. These signals were not only protected within the United States, but because of the way international radio agreements were written, neighboring countries had to limit co-channel interference contours to no closer than several hundred miles from their borders with the United States. Truly, wide area protection. To better understand the fate of the clear channels, it's useful to review how the initial clear assignments were made. In 1922, Secretary of Commerce Herbert Hoover convened the first of four radio conferences dealing with broadcasting in the United States. Out of that conference came the first standard classifications of stations by power and type of service. Of interest to our report was a so-called Class B radio telephony broadcasting station. That was the grandfather of the high-power 1A clear channel operations. Because so many early stations were clustered around three general frequencies, wavelengths in the parlance of the day, it wasn't long before there weren't enough wavelengths to handle the demand. So in 1923, Hoover convened the second radio conference to deal with rising interference issues as more and more stations came on the air with little regard for precise wavelength tolerance. To satisfy the demand for licenses, the 1923 conference expanded the AM broadcast band from 550 to 1350 kilocycles, setting aside channels from 550 to 1000 kilocycles for territorial coverage. Remember, it'd be more than a quarter century before kilocycles would become kilohertz. The 1923 conference also began to label operating channels by frequency rather than wavelength. 40 of these frequencies, 550 to 800 and 870 to 1000, were reserved for high-power, wide-area Class B operation. Shortly thereafter, four more channels were added, and the B group extended to 1040 kilocycle. That meant there were 44 wide-area protected frequencies. The country was then divided into five radio zones, with the B assignments spread more or less evenly across the five zones. And remember, this B assignment is what we knew as Class 1A down the road. The conference of 1923 thereby set the table for the extensive protection of stations providing high-power wide-area service. In 1924, the third conference extended the upper limit of the band to 1,500 kilocycles, grouped the high-power Class B stations from 550 to 1070 kilocycles, and recognized Canada's right to six of the channels. In the notes of the 1924 conference are concerns about the efficacy of expanding the band to 1500, since they felt few radios would tune that high. This same concern about receivers would surface 60 years later during the X-band proceedings. While the broadcast industry was growing, radio receivers were undergoing design improvements that made them far more sensitive. Better receivers pulled in distant stations which clashed with local signals. Listeners now heard interference whistles of varying beat notes generated by frequency drift in the equipment. In broadcasting's infancy, you should know, the technical performance of frequency control equipment left a lot to be desired, and that beat between stations would change pitch as tubes warmed up or as stations played with transmitter tuning. In spite of the radio conferences, by the mid-1920s, it was clear that radio's expansion was far outstripping the government's ability to regulate the industry. Existing rules weren't adequate to govern operation on the crowded band. New technical guidelines were being announced, but there was little enforcement. It wasn't unusual for stations to change operating wavelengths and power levels arbitrarily to find the clearest dial spot. In the earliest days, by the way, station frequency was set by aligning a knob pointer with a pencil mark on the transmitter's wavelength control dial, a pencil mark left behind by the last radio inspector. During what became known as the chaos of 1926, the Commerce Department's authority was gutted by a federal district court on a ruling overriding Hoover's denial of a license to an unqualified applicant. Hoover and Commerce threw up their collective hands and began to authorize everyone who applied. Immediately, some 200 new stations took to the air with abandon and with little regard for the rules. The result almost destroyed U.S. radio. It quickly became obvious that unless RF anarchy was to be the norm, a sheriff of the airwaves was needed. A massive groundswell of interference complaints finally stimulated Congress to enact the Radio Act of 1927 and to create the Federal Radio Commission to administer this new act. The Federal Radio Commission, or FRC's, charter was twofold. First, to establish avenues through the sky, radio channels freed of interference to the extent they could provide reliable service over great distances. Second, to preclude obscenities into the home by enforcing rules of decorum on the licensees. Through a set of general orders, the FRC confirmed 550 kilocycles to 1500 kilocycles as the U.S. standard broadcast band. To provide avenues through the sky, they reaffirmed the set-aside of frequencies for wide-area coverage, and they proposed that only one station be allowed to operate at night on each of these 40 channels. The clear channels and their dominant stations, from the October 1928 radio guide, were as follows. Few surprises, dear listeners. 640 KFI, 650 WSM, 660 WEAF New York, 670 WMAQ, 680 KPO San Francisco, 700 WLW, 710 WOR, 720 WGN / WLIB, 740 WSB, 750 WJR, 760 WJZ, 770 WBBM and KFAB, 790 KGO, 800 WFAA and WBAP. On 810 WCCO, 820 WHAS, 830 KOA, 850 WWL, 860 WABC, which became WCBS, 870 WLS, WENR, 970 KJR and WOC, 980 KDKA, 990 WBZ, 1000 KYW, Chicago, 1020 WHAS, 1040 KRLD, WFAA, 1050 KNX, WHO, WOI, 1060 WBAL, 1070 WTAM, WEAR, 1080 WBT, 1090 KMOX, 1100 was WLWL and WPG, 1110 WRVA, 1130 KSL and KFKB, 1140 had WAPI, 1150 WHAM, 1160 WOWO, 1170 WCAU, 1180 KEX and KOB, and 1190 WOAI. Remember, this was in 1928, and it's from the October 1928 Radio Index Tuning Book. Many of these assignments would change over the next dozen years and longer, and only KFI, WSM, and WMAQ would remain where they started with their original call letters. And now only KFI and WSM have their original calls, as we know. Of interest to our story is that the Federal Radio Commission suggested the maximum authorized power on these 40 channels might be several hundred kilowatts. This may have been the first official suggestion that superpower stations in excess of 50,000 watts might one day be authorized. And that's part one of our multi-part report on the breakup of the clear channels. Next month, dear listeners, we'll see what the Federal Radio Commission, the FRC's first major proclamation was all about, General Order No. 40 in 1928. It was obviously necessary, and we'll find out why. This is Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service. In 30 days, we'll be back with part two of our clear channel matter. Till then, good listening, DXers.
Thanks, Mark. Now let's turn our attention to the 2005 National Radio Club Convention, which is coming up over Labor Day weekend, and that's just a few months away, so sit down, listen up, because here's all the details. The convention is going to be held at the Best Western, which is located at 1750 Sumneytown Pike. That's S-U-M-N-E-Y-T-O-W-N, and then Pike. In Culpsville, that's K-U-L-P-S-V-I-L-L-E, Pennsylvania, 19443. And Culpsville is a suburb, or close to, Lansdale, Pennsylvania. The hotel telephone number, if you have any questions, is area code 215-368-3800. If you're placing a reservation, call 1-800-277-3615. Room rate is $75 per night, and be sure to mention the National Radio Club to get that low rate. Room sharing is limited to 4 per room. Registration for the convention is $45 for the convention and the banquet. And if your spouse comes, it's only $35 for he or she. and that is for the convention and the banquet. Now, if you decide to take off early and not do the banquet on Sunday, the convention rate is only $20 per person and $10 for your wife or husband if you bring them along. So those are the rates for the convention, and you can pay either by just showing up the day of the convention and paying to your convention host, or what you can do is send it in here to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service or to Ken Chatterton up in Mansville, New York. We'll take your money and be sure to get your name on the convention roster. Or you can log on to www.nrcdxas.org and click on the convention link, and then click on 2005 National Radio Club Convention. And that will take you to a place where you can pay by credit card. Sorry, we can't take credit cards over the phone or by mail. Here's the activities slated for the convention. Friday registration starts at 9 a.m. Friday evening, an illustrated tour of AM radio in Tampa Bay, Florida, including an explanation of just what Tampa Bay means. On Saturday morning, tour of Philadelphia radio stations WFIL 560 and WNTP 990. Carpools will be arranged. On Saturday afternoon, display of radio newspapers and magazines from the 1920s and the 1930s. Complete lists of radio stations from the early 20s up to the present for your review. On Saturday evening, the annual National Radio Club DX Audio Service meeting and the auction of valued treasures. And on Sunday morning, the wake-up quiz. All you can win is assorted candies for yelling out the correct answer to important radio station trivia. Dress rehearsal for the October DX Audio Service Travelogue featuring stations operating at 9:30 on the AM dial. And then the annual official National Radio Club examination with a free year membership going to the winner. Sunday afternoon, Dave Marthaus will entertain us with his stories of how small-town AM radio stations can work and exist and even thrive. And Dave is living proof. Sunday evening, the annual banquet has been moved to Sunday, and it's going to be at the Meeting Hotel. The guest speaker is going to be Dave McCrork. He's the operator of internet radio station WNAR-AM, along with a Part 15 station that is in nearby Lansdale. Monday, departure with a promise to reassemble next year. Now, please note, a special program for the ladies is in the works and will be announced as soon as possible. Addition program activities are always added a week or two before each convention, so watch out on the webpage as details will become available, and we'll try to make it known as soon as we get that information. If you have any items that you'd like to contribute to the auction, they should be mailed to Dave Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D-T. He is the convention host, and he can be reached at Post Office Box 3111. Scranton, that's S-C-R-A-N-T-O-N, Pennsylvania, 18505-0111 via regular mail. Recently, I received a telephone call from a DX Audio Service member chiding me for wanting to take a step back from email. He said, and I quote, "Email is efficient, it's immediate, and what's more, it's cheap," unquote. Well, I have no doubt that it is all those things and probably more, but it's not for everyone, and that may surprise you. I went on to explain to him why I was taking this step back, and let me explain it to you members now, and maybe you can understand my position. My email has consistently overflowed day to day with some 200 to 600 messages. Probably of those 200 to 600, a good deal of that, perhaps 75%, was spam or junk mail that comes in. And I've put a filter on to deal with that, which has taken the sting out of it. I also get a lot of crazy mail, messages that people send, which really they have no business in sending. I mean, it's usually messages that they wouldn't say to your face or to you on a telephone, but for some reason they feel comfort in sending it in email form. But nevertheless, a lot of these email messages come in, including some legitimate email. But it all takes time to read and deal with. I did a time survey a couple months ago, and I just finished it up, and I found out that I'm spending between 2.45 and 4.1 hours a day just dealing with email. And I thought that that was rather absurd, particularly since I'm not getting other things done that I'd really like to do. Such as, you may ask, hey Fred, whatever happened to all Radio 3 and 4? Well, it's still sitting here on the audio editor. I just can't get to it because as soon as I get done with email, it's time for bed. No more time in the day. So I had to make a decision, and that decision was email lost. DX Audio Service trumped it. So, if you're wondering why I'm not on email a lot, that is why. If you want to send me an email message, you can do that, but understand a couple things. First of all, it's not immediate on my end. I may not read the email for 1, 2, or even 3 days. If your email is filtered, I won't see it at all. And if the email is rude or somewhat abusive, it may not even be replied to. Which brings me to point number 2, and that is the best way to get in touch with me. And that is usually by card or letter. Because if I have a card or letter, I have a written record that I can refer to, and it gives me some checks and balances. And when somebody requests a replacement tape for a lost tape or something like that, I can take that and send that to the headquarters just to let them know where their money went to for a second tape plus the postage. Keep in mind, I have to be responsible to the National Radio Club's Board of Directors for all the expenses incurred for the DX Audio Service. Telephone is okay. Well, it's going to be a lot better, and let me tell you why. It looks like in the next 30 days, I should have the new Linux-based Asterix telephone system put into the studio. This new system is voice over IP technology. First of all, I'm going to save a ton of money on my, well, not on car insurance, but on the telephone bills, because it's only $19.95 free long distance to North America. Secondly, I'm going to be able to get rid of a bunch of telephone lines, which, to those of you who call the Musings to the Members line, means you're going to have to change your habits. If you call the DX Audio Service Musings to the Members line and receive a disconnect message, that means the new system is in, and it's time to delete that number and call the main number. And that main number is 419-228-6223. That's 22-VOBI, by the way. 419-228-6223. The new telephone number will have basically what's known as a PBX. It will allow you to press a button and go pretty much anywhere from the Musings line to me in the studio. Perhaps even reroute the call back up to Ken Chatterton. Who knows? We can do a lot with this system. But the bottom line is it'll make it a lot more efficient on this end and a lot more reliable. Above all, remember, don't call this number until the old Musings line disappears. Otherwise, your call will be in vain. But look for it in the next 30 days or so. I'm really looking forward to it because I know it'll save me a lot of hassle with Musings on that old XT, yes, that's right, XT-based computer system. The telephone system that we're using now, which is based on an AT&T digital technology, which is obsolete. And this new system will allow us to grow over the years. So keep that number in mind, 419-228-6223. We'll be switching to that for just about everything.
At this time, please turn over your tape to side 2.
WXYZ.